to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded December 17th, 2025. Well, as government goon squads maraud freely the streets of the United States, while hundreds of everyday citizens are arrested and held as terrorists in Great Britain, and on the continent, authors, journalists, jurists, and others with the temerity to poke their opinions above the parapets of the European Union's acceptable discourse diktats face being sanctioned out of normal life, it's perhaps safe to call it a day for the noble democratic experiment. But then, just when did the West actually walk its talk of universal rights and freedoms? It's a question taken up by my first guest in the new journalism anthology, Killing Democracy, Western Imperialism's Legacy of Regime Change and Media Manipulation. Finian Cunningham is a prolific journalist and two-time Serena Shim Award for Uncompromising Integrity in Journalism recipient. He spent the better part of a decade living in and reporting from the Tigray region of Ethiopia before being forced out by the East African nation. Finian's many articles on international affairs appear at numerous online outlets, including Strategic Culture. Finian Cunningham in the first half. And last month, the Trump administration released its national security strategy document. The American president describes it as a, quote, roadmap to ensure that America remains the greatest, etc., etc. But beyond its rhetoric, the NSS is a serious undertaking in dangerous times that can't be ignored. KJ Noh is an award-winning journalist, political analyst, writer, and teacher specializing in the geopolitics of the Asia-Pacific region. His prodigious contributions to political analyses of global issues can be found online at, among other places, Dissident Voice, The People's Daily, Global Times, and Counterpunch, where his recent article, How to Read the New National Security Strategy Document, appears. KJ is, too, a frequent commentator on various news programs, co-hosts The China Report on the Breakthrough News Network, and contributed with Finian Cunningham et al. To Killing Democracy. KJ Noh and Divining the Entrails of the National Security Strategy in the second half. But first, Finian Cunningham and officially seeing out the era of Western democracy. Welcome back to the show, Finian.
Chris, nice to be back with you.
Well, it's my great pleasure, too. And after what looks like almost 3 years, by my reckoning, it's good to speak with you. Congratulations on the release of Killing Democracy. On this book, Finian, you're joined by some great writers, all save one alums of this show. You introduced the book in the chapter Illusory Democracy, evoking first the violent overthrow of Chilean President Salvador Allende in 1973. But this is more than mere history, in my view, at least. Last week, the proto-fascist and avowed Augusto Pinochet admirer José Antonio Kast won election in Chile, quite convincingly, if the numbers are to be believed. Finian, what, in your view, is the through line between these two events, the overthrow of the democratically elected Allende and this re-election of somebody who, by his own account, would happily overthrow Salvador Allende?
Yeah, it's incredible, really, Chris, that, after the horrors of the Pinochet dictatorship, 17 years of brutal dictatorship, which ended in about 1990 with the return of civilian government, that since from then, from 1990 till now, what's that, 35 years, we've got the return to brutal Pinochet dictatorship. Well, the guy who was elected, José Antonio Kast, is a big fan of Pinochet, and one of his brothers was in the Pinochet regime as a central banker, I think. The president-elect, José Antonio Kast, his father was a German Nazi officer who escaped to Chile with the rat lines after the Second World War. So this president-elect of Chile has got some really, quite sinister pedigree and kind of heritage, and quite open about it, very much in line with the Argentinian president, Javier Milei, who are all part of the Trump shift to right wing, naked kind of right wing sort of politics, and very contemptuous of international rule or order relations. So it's quite a disturbing echo from a past time that was not that far ago, really, within living memory, of a horrific dictatorship that was brought into Chile as a regime change operation by the Nixon administration in 1973, with Kissinger quite openly plotting to overthrow an elected president of Chile, Salvador Allende, in 1973. Although I would say, Chris, you know, we're in a time now where it seems to be even more flagrant, you know, the Washington's regime change operations. I mean, they've been going on for 80 years, as the book Killing Democracy tracks back over 8 decades. But I think we're in a time now, Chris, where it's much more naked and flagrant. I mean, you know, we're looking at Venezuela, what's going on there. I mean, the Trump administration just openly, quite blatantly, calling for regime change, deploying massive force to precipitate regime change. I mean, a complete violation of the UN Charter. And also disturbingly is that the Western media, the United States media, as usual, is covering for this criminal policy. But even more, I think, you know, flagrantly not calling out Trump's grotesque and absurd narrative to justify his criminal attempt to overthrow that government. So the whole region, well, the world, in fact, but certainly the US, the Western Hemisphere, seems to be descending into complete, I would say, just barbaric, kind of like law of the jungle.
Pirate kings, it seems. Trump came out today, actually, just announcing that he wasn't going to relent on Venezuela until they turned over all of the land and oil that they'd stolen from America, meaning that the land and the oil that they're standing upon must be returned to its rightful owners in Washington. About the book, and tying in with what happened in Chile, I'm reading that the Guardian says that in trying to write an analysis of why this avowed dictator in waiting would receive such a large amount of the popular vote, if indeed he did, they posit that it was because there's an atmosphere of fear in Chile, a fear of crime, even though Chile is right now listed as the safest country in South America. This was the platform that brought caste into power in bringing about the seemingly inexplicable election results that, after, as you mentioned, almost 20 years of real fear and disappearing tortures, murders by the state, and all other manner of abuse of the population, that can be somehow memory hold and an artificial fear of a crime wave that doesn't exist can be evoked, and also an immigration style hysteria similar to in the United States. I don't know what the immigration situation in Chile is, but I can't imagine that it would be enough to put power into the mouth of a proto-fascist, as José Antonio Kast describes himself to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I've seen reports, fairly reliable reports, Chris, that, you know, a lot of the immigration influx to Chile, because it's relatively got a better economy in that region, a lot of people migrate to the country for economic reasons. And a lot of the migration is coming from Venezuela, who are trying to get away from the economic misery that has been imposed on Venezuela, going back to Obama and before, back to George Bush, George W. Bush. You know, when the sanctions regime started to be imposed on Hugo Chavez, the late socialist president there, and then his successor, Nicolas Maduro, you know, the US has been imposing, ratcheting up decades of sanctions to suffocate the Venezuelan economy, which has led then to a lot of displacement of people, you know, all around the region, but certainly going towards Chile, which has then provoked consternation or resentment among Chileans towards the, this perceived influx of migrants, economic migrants. In our book, Killing Democracy, Daniel Kovalik deals a lot with the history of Venezuela and the economic sanctions, economic warfare, economic terrorism through sanctions on Venezuela, destroying the country's society or trying to destroy it and their economy, which then leads to your knock-on problems for the region. Unfortunately, you know, this causal relationship is not always, you know, visible or kind of apparent. The migration problem that Chile has faced, which has led to this proto-dictator's election, José Antonio Kast, that discontent with the migration into Chile has largely been provoked or incited by Washington's economic warfare on its northern neighbor Venezuela. So we've got this kind of like negative, this vicious circle of causes and effects, which lead in all sorts of nefarious directions. And history will attest that the collapse of capitalism does lead to fascism, you know, and can spur then, you know, even more drastic manifestations of capitalist breakdown through fascism. So it's quite a contradiction that the consequences of, you know, rampant imperialism and capitalism creates then further shifts to the right, to fascism, which I think we can say is visible or manifesting in Chile.
And not just Chile, in its neighbors, Ecuador, Bolivia, Argentina, El Salvador, Honduras, the whole region, it seems to be an outright reversal of the pink tide of a decade ago, a hope that there would be some socialist rising in those countries where they would take back what has been stolen from them by the imperial powers, the imperial power that Trump personified perfectly in his latest press release, saying that, well, what belongs to us, you just happen to live on it. Now give it back or else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Daniel Kovalik, our co-author in the book, does a great, I think, survey of Venezuela's history. And for over a century, the country was pretty much just treated as an oil station for the US, run by dictatorships one after another, which were installed by the United States to completely plunder the country and its vast oil wealth, leaving the vast majority of the population totally impoverished until the rise of Hugo Chavez in 1998, which, you know, through a democratic election, became president and embarked on a whole new policy of nationalising the oil industry, which quite rightly so, to claim the wealth of the country for its people. And this is what I think Trump is referring to, that how dare, you know, our vassal steal our wealth, you know, meaning the country taking its own wealth into its own hands. Trump, through his, you know, absolute arrogance, is mischaracterizing this as somebody thieving from the United States. So it really just illustrates how monstrously arrogant and criminal the US ruling class is, that they would portray natural justice and democracy for a country as somehow theft of their prerogative, their privileges that they have been living with for you know, a century or more. But I would like to just emphasize, Chris, that I think the survey all across several countries would indicate that there is a complete international lawlessness, absolute breakdown in any kind of international law. We haven't actually come away from the Gaza genocide, totally backed by the United States for over 2 years and its Western allies, you know, just weaponizing the genocide and many other examples of the complete breakdown in international law. And I think the What we're arguing in the book is that this is just a corollary or a manifestation of decades of chronic abuse and violation of the international legal order, the UN Charter, which came into force in 1945, was established to outlaw imperialist aggression among nations. This was the purpose of the UN Charter, to completely banish any repetition of the likes of the First World War and the Second World War, where imperialism had run amok across the globe. Now, this UN Charter, which is a very fine and noble document, and it serves as a template for proper international order and conduct if it was abided by, but it has been trashed, absolutely trashed, for 8 decades. Ever since it was established in 1945, it has been absolutely trashed by, scores of illegal regime change operations and illegal wars. And I think it's completely incontestable that the greatest rogue power, the greatest purveyor of this kind of a criminal behaviour and violation of the international law is the United States and its Western allies. Inevitably, if such rogue conduct is committed, conducted repeatedly, it has the effect of hollowing out any standard of international law. And even, we argue in the book, it has absolutely destroyed any semblance of democracy in Western states themselves. So their own criminal, incorrigible, relentless criminal behaviour led by the United States with its Western allies has completely destroyed, corroded any kind of international law that was embodied in the UN Charter. And the Western media are complicit in that assault on international order, peace and legal international relations. They have aided and abetted this relentless assault from the 1950s right through to the present, with Trump now openly declaring war, regime change, and economic terrorism on Venezuela. And the Western media are shamefully mute in their covering of Trump's every step he takes. I mean, they don't challenge his criminality. They report his various claims against Venezuela as if to kind of legitimise them or apologise or to dignify these outrageous excuses for aggression. So the Western media are very much complicit in our whole degeneration of the international order of proper international relations between nations.
Well, and no mistake that the Trump administration itself is peopled by ex-broadcasters, and most notably from the Fox network. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Finian Cunningham, and Finian is a prolific journalist. He's a 2-time Serena Shim Award for Uncompromising Integrity in Journalism recipient. He has put together a book with a number of journalists, most have been on this program, and the one that hasn't will be in the second half of this program. It's called Killing Democracy, Western Imperialism's Legacy of Regime Change and Media Manipulation. Finian, the first chapter in this book, Illusory Democracy, from Imperialist Wars to Regime Change, when we talk about international law today being hollowed out in that, was it ever solid to begin with? Was this one of those Easter chocolate Easter bunnies to begin with, that just the least prodding and challenging of it reveal that there's actually nothing inside?
Well, yeah, you could kind of, I suppose, take that cynical view, Chris. But I think the UN Charter is a document very worth trying to live up to. I mean, it does explicitly you know, codify that there must be equality between nations and respect for national sovereignty. It very much establishes that those principles, and that there must not be any kind of use of violence or intimidation, aggression towards other nations. That's completely outlawed. But I think what the problem with the UN Charter is that it's not compatible with Western capitalism. It's not compatible with imperialism. And so from its very origin, there was a contradiction, a conflict of interest, while you had diplomats, state planners from the United States participating in the creation of the UN Charter. And no doubt some of those individuals were genuine in their belief of formulating these kind of very noble principles of how to conduct international relations. But the reality, the imperative motives or needs of the capitalist economies require use of force to obtain resources outside its country, or to modify markets, or set up governments that do its bidding. So from the very origins, there was a direct conflict of interest. The West had kind of painted itself into a kind of a conceptual corner, in that it had helped create this very noble and laudable charter. But the problem was then, how can you abide by a charter that prohibits its inherent proclivity to dominate other nations, to violate other nations' sovereignty, as the Western powers had been doing for centuries before the UN Charter was created. So this was inevitably going to lead to violations of the Charter by the US and its Western allies. And we've seen, I think it's quite incontestable, that it's the evidence is there, that there's just been this 8 decades of habitual, relentless violation of a charter that the Western powers, at least in theory, proclaim to uphold. So you've got right there a vast hypocrisy and duplicity at work, which undermines their own credibility, their sort of moral authority that they might wish to claim. And this is how we put forward the argument that the West has ended up killing its, any claims of democracy and international order by its relentless criminality. The Western powers have got away with this for decades.
Centuries, really. I mean, if you look at the Treaty of Westphalia, the Peace of Westphalia, in the 17th century, they said, the nations, essentially, that it was a declaration that nations are responsible for themselves, and this is the end of imperial marauding and so forth. That was a fine idea, and it brought peace for a while to Europe, but it's never really been lived up to as a principle, I would argue. I mean, in the same sense, in your first essay, you call democracy illusory. What do you mean by that?
Well, it just doesn't live up to its high claims. As with the UN Charter, as with democracy being supposed to be.
But do you think it was ever meant to, or are we just being taken? They'll give us high praise and woo us with soft language, but they don't really mean it. This is just to keep the plebs in place while the people that rule continue, robbing and marauding as ever. I mean, I would say, as a cynic, I would say that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose, Chris, I don't know if you could kind of portray it as a sort of a master plan from the beginning, as a master plan of duplicity. But in effect, the ideals of democracy and the UN Charter, are cannot be fulfilled, cannot be delivered because of the inherent nature of capitalist power and economics, imperialism, imperialistic violence to convey or to obtain the economic powers that are desired through capitalist economics. So there's, while you know they can set out there's the beautiful principles and the aspirations are all very laudable, but they're just impractically out of reach given the practices, the outworkings of the capitalist system, yeah. With regard to its own citizens, with regard to neighbouring countries, as we can see over and over again. Does that mean to say that the ideas are not worth pursuing? I think they are, and I think the UN Charter, we have to perhaps admit that, or you recognise that we can't achieve that under our existing political economic system, that we have to address the inherent violence and problems of injustice of power and wealth under our prevailing system that then warps all international peace and order.
Well, Finian, we're fast out of time. And now, again, the book is Killing Democracy, Western Imperialism's Legacy of Regime Change and Media Manipulation, co-authored with Finian Cunningham, Dan Kovalik, Jeremy Kuzmarov, Ron Ridenour, and KJ Noe. KJ Noe is going to be on the show in the second half. We're going to talk a little bit about the book, but we're going to talk mostly about his recent article outlining the similar themes, but in real time. He's broken apart the American National Security Strategy document. This is, I would say, history will maybe regard this as a similar import to the Treaty of Westphalia, but maybe in a dark, negative, reverse sense. This is where America openly declares war on the world and dispenses with democracy once and for all. It's a joy to speak with you again, Finian. I hope we don't wait 3 years before we talk the next time. Before we go to Finian, how do people get the book?
The main way of getting it, Chris, would be through Amazon. I kind of shudder a wee bit to give them a plug, but the book is mainly on order through Amazon.
Killing Democracy, Western Imperialism's Legacy of Regime Change and Media Manipulation. The lead author, Finian Cunningham, Dan Kovalik, Jeremy Kuzmarov, Ron Ridenour, KJ Noel. Thanks a lot again, Finian, for coming on. Stay tuned after the break. I'm going to be back with KJ Noel, and we're going to talk, as I said, about some of the latest from the United States and his contributions to Killing Democracy. Thanks, Finian, for coming on, eh?
Thanks, Chris.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago. Jakarta. Helsinki. Cape Town. Sao Paulo. Manchester. Bangalore. And somewhere in Russia, I can't actually remember the name of.
From wherever they'd been, they're terrorizing Venezuela in what they call the Gulf of America. No fishermen might get to know next time they venture to go, because their country has our oil that somehow got under their soil. And if you wonder what may be the empire's goal, $20 billion is being held by the US, the UK, and Europe as well. These are the clowns, their logic applied. They think it's them who should decide the fate of the people of a sovereign country. A whole population they call enemy. Making up nonsense about fentanyl as a fig leaf for the people they kill. And if you wonder what may be the empire's goal, we'll be right back.
century Monroe Doctrine. What's next with the ships and tanks? Just ask the Venezuelan Central Bank. Yes, if you wonder what may be the empire's goal, just follow.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, last month,